One of the interesting and perhaps delightful aspects of Buddhist meditation or Buddhist practice is that it gives us an opportunity to explore different dimensions of life, different dimensions of being alive. And I'd like to distinguish between some of these dimensions that you might think of exploring in case you think your life is too unidimensional. You can expand your dimensions a little bit. Two common dimensions that are often enough referred to in our modern society is a dimension of being and doing. And often they're put in opposition to each other, being and doing. And partly because some people do too much. And if you're always doing, I mean, I'm probably talking to the converted here, but if you're always doing, actively doing, being busy, you can get alienated from yourself. You can end up with a lot of stress, a lot of even anxiety that builds up, you know, always doing. And it can, if you're always doing, it can become kind of, for some people, it can become a little bit of an addiction. There's a habit sets in motion of doing. And then even when nothing needs to be done, that habit is so deeply kind of conditioned that you just look for, what else can I do here? What else can I do? And so it certainly, for some people, they're doing is an illness. It just gets to be too much, and it kind of causes illness, causes all kinds of problems. And so because for some people doing, that dimension of living, is a problem, they love the teaching on being. And then there's the dimension of life, which is to be. And some people love it. They can come and sit and meditate and not do anything, or go on vacation and not do anything, or supposedly, and just be. And some people, it's a great delight to be able to sit and be. Not have any expectations for what they have to accomplish, not have any demands for what has to happen. They don't have to prove themselves or apologize for themselves, or they don't have to, all the stuff of doing can drop away. There's nothing you have to do. And so great. You can just breathe at ease, have easy breath, and just be present, and just let what has to happen kind of roll through you. And you don't have to defend yourself or push anything away or, you know, make anything happen. And for some people, they find that really a delight. Even when it's not a delight, it can be deeply satisfying. Because sometimes if you do a lot, doing tends to create traces, momentum in our psyche, in our body. And sometimes when you stop all the doing, you have to first experience the momentum, the traces. And so the tensions and the momentum of the mind and all kinds of things. And sometimes it can be uncomfortable to do that. And some people will then, rather than feel the discomfort, will just start doing something. You know, just do again to keep busy so you don't have to feel. But there can be something very satisfying about being when the beingness, even when it feels, you're feeling the discomfort. But some of that dissatisfaction probably takes having some wisdom, some appreciation that allowing yourself to feel the momentum and the traces is an important and useful thing. Sometimes it's obvious because you can feel, you know, the tensions and stuff shedding. And so it's great to feel that shedding. Oh, this is good. It's going away. Sometimes it doesn't feel like it's shedding, it's just there, and it can be satisfying to know that it's actually more profound and more useful to be present for it and see it than to run away from it. Or it can be satisfying to know, well, I have a practice to work with it. I don't have to run away from it. I can engage my mindfulness practice with this phenomena, and so I have a practice or a series of practices to engage with it, maybe a loving kindness practice. So the practice of being can in some way or other be quite satisfying for people. And so in a simplistic way, sometimes people will make a disduality between being and doing and set up being as being a better thing than doing. You know, so, and there are not a shortage of teachers who teach meditation practice as a being practice. Just be. And In classic Buddhist teachings, I've never seen this polarity emphasized between doing and being. So it's kind of a modern thing, maybe because of the high pace of modern life. The polarity or the duality that I see in the early texts is not between doing and being, but the problem is not doing. The problem is what's called in a Buddhist language becoming. And doing, becoming is a form of doing, but not all doings are becomings. Does that make sense? So becoming is the act of creating an identity, becoming something, making something happen, constructing something. And in particular, and in Buddhist psychology, becoming is not, you know, building a house, you know, externally, or, you know, but is this creation of identity, of creation of self, creation of this personal constructs. So the Sunday paper, as you probably all know, that I got today, has a phenomenal number of advertisements in it. And the usual thing I do when I get the paper, the first thing I'll do is I'll go through the paper and pull out all this big bulk of advertisements. The second thing I'll do is usually feel a little bit of pang of guilt for what am I doing getting a Sunday paper? I'm just going to throw away all this pile of advertisements. Anyway, so I just kind of put it away in the recycling. And however, I could stop and look at all the advertisements. I can spend all day looking. And I could start thinking about how, you know, I could get these really cool things. And getting these cool, and which cool things I want to get so that I will look really cool. Or so that I'd have certain, you know, so, you know. And so the process of getting and imagining and then getting has to do with building a self. That's called becoming. So I could just look and see, well, I need to, you know, need to get something so I can see what's on sale. And there's no selfing in that activity. So this actually, the activity of becoming is what's often caused is understood as being a problem in Buddhism. It doesn't have to be a problem, but that's more than doing is not a problem. Becoming is a problem. This identification is a problem. Making a self is a problem out of something. And there can be doing without that identification. Luckily, otherwise we'd have to stop doing. But you know, which is a problem. But doing is not the problem of this act of becoming. So becoming has a quality of being, of clinging or attachment as inherent in it. There's always going to be, in Buddhism, this word becoming, bhava, always comes out of clinging, out of craving. So I don't know exactly, maybe you have other definitions you want. It's a certain movement that comes into existence if there is craving there. So there's so that's kind of, and so the direction that Buddhism wants to go to is not to being exactly, but to a very un-English word. I guess it is an English word, but used in the wrong way, different way from us. Unbecoming. Oh, you're so unbecoming today. and so what Buddhism means by unbecoming is not involved in this creative activity that arises out of clinging. So we're not making something out of clinging. We're not building up a sense of self out of clinging. So discovering a quality of unbecoming. And unbecoming, now a being, just being, can in some sense involve an unbecoming process. Because being, you're not building and building. But the problem is becoming, the creation that comes out of clinging. And the Buddhist tradition says that doing, there's a certain kind of doing that's part of the process of unbecoming. Does it make sense? Or is this too complicated, all these words? Anybody want to admit that's too difficult so far? So inherent or an important part of Buddhist practice is in fact doing. There's some kind of doing that has to happen. And however, one of the strategies of doing is to do being. However, being practice is only one practice in a number of different dimensions that we can tap into as we do it practice. So sometimes it's very important to engage in a doing practice. So for example, you sit down to meditate and your mind is just so wild. Maybe a useful thing to do is to focus on the breath for a while to settle yourself. Or maybe your mind is so wild because of how you've been living your life. And the appropriate thing, what to do, is to start living by the precepts. Seeing, how can I clean up my life a little bit? Maybe I need to practice some forgiveness. Maybe I need to go, or apologies. Maybe I need to go find someone and ask them if they forgive me for what I've done. That's a doing practice. And sometimes we can't really settle ourselves until we somehow engage in the world, maybe ask for apology or offer, you know, offer our apologies or something. Or perhaps we are so lethargic that it doesn't make sense just to sit there and be, because we should fall asleep. And so what's needed is to somehow tone the body, get a little bit better energy in the body, in the system here, so that when we sit down, there's a coursing of energy here that keeps us awake and alert. Just to be, the practice of being, doesn't feel very good if you're keeling over. You know, you have to kind of, there's a certain kind of energy that's there. So you have to kind of discern where we are and decide what needs to, what kind of doing, what do we need to do to maybe bring us into balance or bring into harmony or bring something, make something happen. And partly so that in the service of being, so we can come to a place of just being. So if you can't just be, then perhaps you need to kind of see what you have to do to come into a sense of being. One of the really pristine kinds of beingness happens when the five hindrances are put at bay. When the forces of desire, when the forces of ill will, when the forces of sloth and torpor, when the forces of restlessness and anxiety, and the forces of doubt are no longer shaping or are becoming, no longer shaping us, no longer influencing us, no longer pulling us around. So it's called putting a day, or the technical word is secluding ourselves from the hindrances, or making ourselves independent from the hindrances. And there's a certain kind of joy that can bubble up. Actually, the expression is joy and happiness that can bubble up when we can just be, and the mind is not being pulled by the five hindrances. And that sense of joy and happiness that can come from being is considered in Buddhism to be a very important happiness to cultivate and develop. So this is a little bit of a paradox. So once you get the hindrances to settle away, you can really appreciate more the beingness, just being. And then there's an appreciation or a joy, just a joy of not being pulled around and just being joy of being left alone by your mind. Isn't that great? It can be great. And then the Buddha recommended starting to do something. Once you really get yourself into nice being, you don't just stay there. It isn't the end. But then you can begin exploring what this dimension of beingness, engaging in it. And the next, so there's the dimension of doing, the dimension of being, the dimension of becoming or shaping. And then there's a dimension of knowing. And knowing is one of the most beautiful aspects of the human mind and the heart, if it's done properly, pristinely. So once we can be, then the idea is to add to the sense of beingness a quality of knowingness. I think it's helpful to think of knowing, the quality of the mind knowing something, is an expression of being. Being, when we just be, we don't have to think of ourselves as just being passive or as not doing. There's a certain kind of doing that can arise out of being. Does that make sense to you? When you have this polarity or this duality between being and doing is bad and being is right, then it can seem like, well, how am I supposed to never do anything? But actually, when you're resting on yourself and settled on yourself and not trying to shape anything or try to build yourself up in some kind of way and relax, doing is part of what human minds do, or human beings do. If your neighbor, if you're walking down the street and just being, and your neighbor trips and needs a hand up, you offer your hand and lift your neighbor up. That's just a normal thing. It can be expression of being that we also do. Am I being too complicated today? All these different categories. So what I'm trying to say is that doing doesn't have to be put in opposition to being, but doing can arise out of being. And one of the kinds of doing that's really beautiful is knowing. The mind that's relaxed will know. And in fact, when there's a really good quality sense of beingness, of emness, just being here, the more visceral, the more stronger that sense of being is, the more satisfying it is, I'm just here in some wonderful way, it has to come together with knowing. Because how would you know that you're being? Unless there's knowing, right? And in fact, the stronger the sense of being is, the more we're centered and grounded just here, simultaneously, the stronger the knowing of that beingness will exist also. And someone might focus so much on the sense of being, they don't notice that there's knowing while they be. But in fact, the stronger the being is, the greater the knowing. So the stronger the knowing, the higher quality sense of being there can be. There was a time in my meditation practice where I did a lot of just being practice. Just, I'm just going to be here. I'm not going to try to do anything, make something, anything happen. And I had enough stability. I had been able to, my life was clear enough and stable enough that I didn't need to try to bring into balance or struggle with that too much. I could just practice being. And whenever I found myself wandering off and doing something, I would come back. Just let go of all that and come back and just be. Nothing to attain, nothing to do. No attempt to get concentrated, no attempt to really, still my mind, or even to be mindful. The practice is, I come back and just be. And it was a great practice, because when you just be, it's an antidote to all the doing that normally keeps us kind of spinning out. And so I would feel myself just kind of unravel in a healthy way, or unwind in a healthy way, just by being. All the attempts to kind of wind myself up would settle away. And I get very, very peaceful and very relaxed. And then I noticed that I would get to a plateau where nothing would change and unfold for a long time. And then after a while, I thought, this doesn't feel quite... It feels okay, it feels nice, but it feels like something is calling me that's greater than that. Something's some further movement. And so what I decided was that what was needed was to add knowing. And so I started actually then looking more carefully at what was happening in that state of being and identifying it with my knowing mind. Oh, there's a breath, there's a short breath, there's a long breath, there's tension, there's letting go, there's contraction, there's expansion, there's movement, there's a sound, there's a calm in my mind, there's peacefulness in my mind, there's a thought happening there, there's, you know. So I started identifying what was being experienced in the present moment. Now, this knowing quality can be taken up inappropriately and become too much of a doing practice. And you can feel yourself kind of getting contracted or coming into shape, becoming again. But it's actually the knowing process of knowing more pristinely, more carefully, what is actually going on here, allowed me to go deeper in the practice. The being, just letting go and just being, brought me to a beautiful place. But in order to go to a deeper level, I had to add to that sense of beingness the doing of knowing. To know. And to know more precisely, more carefully. And I found that when the practice is going really well, that the knowing is deeply satisfying. It's like this beautiful, crisp, pristine thing in the mind. You know something. Knowing is something the natural mind will do. And you can cultivate and develop it, strengthen it, enhance it. And that allows actually the mind to relax and get stiller and stiller. then using the knowing quality of the mind allows the mind or the being to drop into deeper and deeper states of being. Because if you sit, if you live a kind of normal life and work and all this stuff, and you sit and you just be, it can be very satisfying in contrast to where you're coming from. And you can feel, I'm just being, it's great. However, you're probably going to be blind to the fact that there's still a lot of doing. It's just very subtle. And it's so subtle that mostly what you do in noticing is the great sense of calm and well-being that's in contrast to how you were. But there's still lots of things going on. In fact, just this last week, someone came to me and said, I have, after many years of meditation, I've come to this place in my meditation where I'm really here in a kind of clear, complete way, and my mind is very clear. And I can sit there for 45 minutes and without any thoughts at all. It's just tremendously clear. And it feels so good. And what do you think of that? The person asked me. I said, it's great. However, what you might want to do is to look and see more subtly, in a more refined way, is there in fact no thinking? Is there any thoughts there? Because probably what's happening is normal discursive layer of thinking has stopped. But there's still probably going to be a very subtle layer of thinking going on. But because it's so different, so other than the discursive level, that you don't recognize it as thinking. And so she came back a couple of days later and said, you know something? You're right. So it's that joke I sometimes make. You're sitting there in meditation and you say, I'm not thinking right now. And because it's so subtle, so different than discursive thinking, you can hardly notice it. So far in the background, you're so silent and still, that little extra recognition or cognition that goes on. So to kind of look more deeply, what's really going on here? There's still subtle thoughts going on, or there's still subtle agendas, or still subtle attitudes going on, that in relationship to what's happening. So I thought that was just being, but actually, I'm being with an agenda. There's still a little bit, self here. Look how good I am, or a little bit trying to make something happen. Or it's so subtle now, and so the knowing can begin showing that. And that seeing that can allow the knowing, the being settling and relaxing to go deeper and deeper. Does that make sense? So there's becoming, shaping, making things happening arises out of attachment, and then there's a doing that can be very beautiful, very helpful, that somehow offers a balance or helps us to settle the momentum of all our becoming. And then a particular kind of doing is being. I'm just going to do being. Just be. And especially being, especially kind of satisfying when the hindrances settle away and nothing's pulling our mind. But then, if you feel like you've come to plateau with just being, then to emphasize a certain aspect of being, which is the knowing quality of the mind, and allow that to become more stronger. Make that your refuge. Make that the place where you rest and where you stay, in the knowing of what's there. And there's some beautiful qualities of knowing. One of the qualities of knowing is that, and this you can kind of explore a little bit in your practice, when you know something, just very simply, very completely, very directly, in its simplicity of knowing, there's no preferences. In the simplicity of knowing, there's not being for or against something. In the simplicity of knowing, there's no being burdened by anything or troubled by anything, and there's no being delighted in anything or happy in anything in a certain kind of way. The simplicity of, there might be, all those things might be there next to the knowing, but the knowing itself has a very pristine, clear, beautiful quality. Usually our knowing is entangled with all these other things going on in the mind. So it's inconceivable that knowing can be so pristine. But if you just know, so for example, you can know that you're unhappy. If you're unhappy, some people are entangled with their unhappiness, caught in it. But if you, there's a way of knowing that you're unhappy, and in the knowing itself is not unhappy. So what happens if you emphasize the knowing? Some teachers say, rest in the knowing. And to do that, one of the things you might encounter is that you don't want to. Because some way or other, you want to stay in the world of being unhappy. Not that you really want to stay unhappy, but somehow the mind wants to get back in there and negotiate and judge and react, and somehow it's like flypaper, and we kind of keep getting back and going back. And to step back and rest in the knowing and discover how the knowing is not unhappy. It's a great thing. It kind of changes your orientation. Oh, wait a minute. If part of me is unhappy, if part of me is not unhappy, then who am I? If part of me is not unhappy, then what do I do with a part of me that's unhappy? You can kind of shift, you can kind of questioning where you're at and who you are and what's going on in a very interesting way. So come back to the knowing, come back to the knowing. And knowing, when it's kind of clear and crisp, I would suggest is actually joyful. To know is joyful. So to know. So becoming, doing, being, knowing. And the more clearly we can know, the better we can understand how to be. The more we can let go of the stuff that keeps us from being. Until the sense of beingness becomes more and more satisfying. Deeply, deeply satisfying. And when and one of the functions of that deep satisfaction of being is to start giving us a sense of freedom, which is another dimension of our life. A sense of being free. I'm free from the hindrances. I'm free from becoming, needing to shape myself. I'm free from my fear. I'm free from my unhappiness. The sense of starting to become free. To recognizing that sense of freedom. To know the sense of freedom. The Buddha put a lot of emphasis on how important it is to know and recognize freedom. And as the freedom, as the beingness becomes stronger, then more and more we'll start to be free. And it's one of the great things is to realize you can be happy just being. And it'll give you a lot of strength to know you can be happy without having to do anything at all. Because then you don't have to do something to be happy. You can just be. And you have available to you a sense of happiness. And why beingness is so happy? I don't quite know. I mean, certainly there's a beingness, the happiness of just not being burdened, not being troubled, being pulled off. It's such a relief. But for some reason, the mind is constructed in such a way that when we just be in a very pristine way, be and know in a very clear, full way, in a very free way, we feel really happy. So I don't know why we're constructed that way, but it seems to be the case. Well, I hope I made enough sense to make this useful today, all these different categories and stuff. But the suggestion is there are different dimensions of who we are. And my suggestion in the beginning, I'll repeat now as we end, is you can actually experiment and explore some of these different dimensions. Each of them is worth exploring in its own right. So you can explore the dimension of becoming, of shaping. You can explore the dimension of doing. You can explore the dimension of being. You can explore the dimension of knowing. And you can explore the dimension of freedom. Five dimensions. So, we have some time for questions. Any questions or comments or testimonials? Yes? Oh, the five hindrances. So the five hindrances are sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and anxiety, and doubt.
So one of the things that came to my mind was the don't know mind. That, and you didn't cover don't know mind. But so I'm thinking, once you know you don't know, you've got the other states down, you're comfortable not knowing, and you know you don't know, and that's okay, right?
Yeah. So not knowing is very important at times. A great practice not to know, because it's sometimes part of the neurotic doing mode is always trying to know, always trying to understand. And certain things are better off not, you know, sometimes you can't understand everything. You can't understand everything about the future. You can't plan everything out. You don't necessarily know what the situation is. Sometimes we come, sometimes with so much interpretive baggage to many situations. We go into a situation and meet someone, and we already have an interpretation of who they are. And the not knowing has a lot to do with putting aside all of our interpretations that we come in see, the preconceived ideas we have of what's going on. But not, that kind of not knowing doesn't have to be in opposition to knowing, the knowing I'm talking about. There's a very simple act of knowing that, like, I know that I don't know who this person is. Or knowing, oh, there's a person in front of me, and that person is crying. I know that. So it's very simple, very immediate, very present. The kind of knowing that happens in meditation practice. But the idea, oh, I know who this person is, and I know what this person needs. Let me tell them, person. Then you that kind of attitude, maybe it's better to practice not knowing for a while.
It seems to me that what you've done is describe mindfulness practice using a different set of words. And I find that very useful, because this practice is really not about the words, particularly the English words. And to be reminded of that by having to think about it in terms of knowing rather than the word insight. Uh-huh. And all the other ways that you describe this process is a very, I think, a very useful jolt to our habitual way of holding the practice. And I think it's wonderful that you could do that, that you could basically reframe it in terms of a whole other set of words.
Okay.
And I know you've done more than that, but that's what strikes me as really the central part of what you've done, and it's... without ever pointing to it.
Great. Okay, thank you. Is it Hilda?
So from my frame of reference, one of the things that seems you're pointing to is a way of stopping not useful chain reactions.
Yes. So yeah. Becoming is unuseful chain reactions.
Right.
And so there. So once we see the world of becoming, how we're just chain reactions of creations and shaping, it's operating in our life, and it takes some seeing. That's part of the function of. But dare I use the word mindfulness now? Part of the function of mindfulness is to see that. Then there has to be some discernment about what to do in relationship to that. And for different people, different things are useful to stop the chain reaction. And certainly meditation practice is one way. Being is one way. But sometimes you actually need to do something, like when, you know, I was thinking of, you know, sometimes apologies are needed. We need to actually engage and do something very active in the world in order to somehow stop the react the chain.
Thank
so,
you.
Is that what,
yeah.
So please explore these different dimensions. And explore the ones, explore all of them. But my hope is that you explore them at a time when each of them is enjoyable. So, you know, enjoy it. Enjoy each one. Each one can be, have its own enjoyment or pleasure. So, thank you.